Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello everyone and welcome to Up the podcast. We're going to dissect what was that shambles against Burton Albion last night. I'm not really sure what we're going to do. I'm predicting this to be quite an angry podcast. I'm joined by Ash, I'm joined by Max, and I'm joined by Dell, although he is out of the studio as it stands, but he should be here in any minute now. And I'm John, presenting it all and tying it all together. Ash, I'm going to go straight to you. What on earth happened last night?
You know, you've said there that we're going to be angry. I don't think that angry is probably the right thing. And I don't want to sound like a patronising parent, but I'm just really disappointed. There was absolutely nothing on show to imply that we were even going to get close to winning that game yesterday. I think we changed formation four times. I think that we saw players playing in all sorts of different positions, and it just looked like it was a bit of a headless chicken performance, really. For a team that scored however many goals so far this season, we could have played for another 90, another 180 minutes. It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? But we weren't scoring. We weren't scoring at all. I don't know whether that was because we were all scored out after Saturday and it's finally catching up with us, similar to like it did against Bolton. But who knows? I think back to last year as well. I think back to the fact that we played Carlisle at home and we lost to them. So that's now 2 years running that we've lost to the team bottom of the league at home. Like, at least we're consistent, I guess. But more than anything, like, just I'm just lost for words. Like, we'd always deep dive into the performances. So I don't want to start now, but it's such a disappointing way to head into what is another crucial match, ultimately, for the team and for the club as well.
Yeah, I think for me, it's equally frustrating when you go and you put in a performance like you did against Cambridge at home, and you put in that performance that we saw, and then, you know, rolls back round to Burton, who are, you know, bottom of the league, around the same sort of place as Cambridge are, and we can't even score a goal and we look completely unthreatening throughout the whole of the match. I think that's really disappointing. And so echoing exactly what Ash said, you know, it's a real struggle to see a team that, you know, we should be beating bottom of the league, and now we find ourselves 3 points out of the relegation, 3 points from the relegation zone, and going into sort of Northampton Town and the derby on Monday. So it's going to be, look, it's unfortunate, it's difficult to take on the chin, but I think it's sort of going to be the story of our season, that this inconsistency isn't going to change very soon.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think it's the worst Peterborough United display I can remember for a long time. I think you mentioned the Carlisle game last season, Ash. At least we had some semblance of attacking quality in the last 10 minutes of that game. Yesterday, we did not look like scoring in a month of Sundays, which is concerning when you think that it's our first game really without Poku, and that's the dross that they served up. I thought there were potentially only two credible mentions on the night, and I tweeted this out after the game, that I thought George Nevitt probably just about got pass marks, in the sense that he looked like one of the few players on the pitch that could pass the ball. And Malik Mothersill, who I didn't think was particularly great throughout, and not a lot came out. I thought at least he took the game to Burton in the final 20 minutes when all around him was folding. There's a lot I could say on a lot of those players. But after last night's game, there was a fair degree of them that I was relatively happy to never see playing a Peterborough United shirt again. I certainly think, even after a night's sleep, Sam Curtis's loan should be terminated right here, right now. I've had enough of him, just not up to it. I know he's an 18-year-old lad, but let's bring on our own 18-year-old lad in Dornelli. I don't want to see him start. I don't want to see him start over Jack Sparks. If you're coming in on loan, at least be better than what we've got. He's worse than what we've got. And I would write off his chances of ever making it at Sheffield United after seeing what he's served up in a posh shirt. pretty useless from minute one. Exeter away, I thought he was decent. The rest of the season, he's been terrible. And like I say, I don't want to go in too hard on an 18-year-old lad, but you're being judged as a first-team player now and you've not shown up. This was your first chance of first-team football. So if you ever want to make it at Sheffield United, you better patch up sharp. I'm really concerned about Oscar Wallin at this point. Come over from Sweden, looked okay for the first few months, first few weeks, but last night, couldn't pass water. The guy just could not pass a ball. He looked like a Swedish fourth division player. Embarrassing level of performance. And I'm done at this point with being, okay, you've got time, you youngsters. I know there has to be a degree of patience with them. And I think as a podcast, we have actually been pretty patient with them. But also, we were League One promotion contenders less than 4 months ago. And go back 12 months, I believe we were the best team in the league. And now you're serving up this dross. So I don't just blame the players, but that performance for a club like Peterborough United is completely unacceptable. And I'm the first to praise players. Someone like Manny Fernandez, I wrote him off at the start of the season. I've been big on him this season. I think he's proven me wrong. I'm readily admit that they've proven me wrong. And I hope Oscar Wallin and Sam Curtis can prove me wrong after this. But both of them, to be honest, I'm pretty much done with at this point. You can't come in and play at that level for any game. I'm pretty angry about it. I thought that performance was deeply concerning. Certainly the most concerning one I've seen this season.
I'm not going to defend Sam Curtis, but I am going to jump in and defend Oscar Wallin, because although last night he probably wasn't at his best and was relatively poor, I think throughout the season he hasn't been awful. He definitely hasn't been one of our worst performing players. And you have to realise that this is his first year in English football. He hasn't been here very long, and I think that's the big thing with Oscar Wallin is. I understand the frustrations. I understand the want for performances now, but we've had a massive restructuring of our defence, especially. And I don't think Oscar Wallin is. I think it was probably a little bit of a mistake. I don't necessarily think he's suited to the style of play, which is the passing out the back. But then, you know, look at Manny Fernandez. That was his biggest criticism coming into the season, and we can see how things change. I think with Wallin, he needs time. And I think there has been some outstanding performances from Wallin, as well as some really rubbish ones. And it's the same sort of string of comment that we've had all season, which is we're very inconsistent. And I feel that stems to all the players on the pitch rather than just Oscar Wallin. I don't think he's been as bad, or he should be written off as a Peterborough United player. Sam Curtis, on the other hand, I won't defend. I don't think he's put in a good performance that I've really seen in a posher. And I wasn't at Exeter away, but if that's the only good performance he's put in, and you know, we're 17, 16 games in now, I think that's really, really disappointing. And we'll have to see if there's an element of where he can kick on. But I'm in complete agreement with you, John. I think it's really disappointing, and I don't think he will do. But I think Oscar Wallin is probably a little bit harsh.
I think my issue at the moment is that how long, like John says, do we make these excuses? Like, we've signed somebody, in my eyes, at the age that Oscar Wallin is, he's not George Nevitt's age. He should be ready to step up and make that step up to League One football. If he's not ready, we shouldn't have signed him. I'd have rather played George Nevitt and accept, right, George Nevitt is a 19-year-old. He will make mistakes. He has lots to learn in the game, but Oscar Wallin's 23, I think it is. Like, if we sign somebody of that age to join a League One team at Peterborough United, he should be ready. I think that maybe, I'm not going to say that Sam Curtis was fantastic last night, but I thought he was decent on Saturday. I thought that he was decent at Shrewsbury as well as Exeter, potentially. So I think that when you talk about the age thing, ultimately, maybe it is the fact that Sam Curtis is an 18-year-old that you are getting that level of inconsistency. I think the frustration is, like we've said multiple times, is we've got two 18-year-old right-backs. Why are we manifesting and harbouring somebody else's when we've got our own, who, yes, has his own faults and wasn't fantastic when he came on last night either, but we're not going to make any money off Sam Curtis. Whether it's softened a blow for some financial reparation from the Harrison Burrows deal, who knows? But I didn't think that we needed a right-back. We've got two, three now, if you include Katongo there. Let's get Sam Curtis back, because it's clear to see that I was baffled that Jack Sparks didn't start. yesterday. I wasn't as much because maybe he needed a rest. But when we're talking about all these players, like the excuse with Vonnegut was like, oh, he's tired. He's played since February. How long are we going to hold on to that for? Like, we've had plenty of time to rest him. Like, he's not like busting a gut every game. Like, yesterday was a walk in the park ultimately. And the one chance that they did have, they scored. It's how long are we going to hold on to these things for and make these excuses? And it's getting to the point now where I think that the excuses are definitely wearing thin.
I just want to open a question up really surrounding this, because obviously we've probably dug some players out and we've explained that we're not really happy with it. But what's the resolution? Because I've been asking this myself for quite a while now. I don't understand where the resolution comes from. Do we go to sort of the academy and just do trial and error until the January transfer window? Do we stick with the same pattern of play that clearly isn't working? Do we need a formation shift? Like, if you were, you know, sort of like the manager in a position where you could make a change like that, where do you go and how do you solve this problem? Because this problem's clear. We've had a massive restructuring of our defence, but I don't think the personnel in the positions that they're in are doing well enough to compete at this level. So how do you resolve that? Where do you sort of go?
I think the only option at this point is the January transfer window, I'm afraid. I think they're, like Ash mentioned, someone like George Nevitt, I don't want to write off because I think I see enough in him for an 18-year-old lad that he's good enough on the ball to merit, you know, sticking with. I think the same with Manny Fernandez. Although I don't think he's been perfect this season, I think he's put in enough credible performances that he's got a line of credit to his name, shall we say. And the same with James Dornelli. He's an 18-year-old lad. He's our academy product. I'm not going to write him off in the same way that I'm going to write Sam Curtis off, who's here for another 6 months and going. But I think there needs to clearly be some restructuring of the defence. And I think the guys that are in that back line have had 17 games now. That's nearly half a season. And while the young and hungry policy does require some patience, I don't think we can go on like this for an entire season. I think I said it before, I'm concerned that because of the volume of goals, because of the standard of performances that are happening, they're being exposed to a level that is above them and it's not doing anyone any favours now. I think in January, we've got to sign at least two players or we need someone like Jadel Katongo, who, look, has avoided criticism so far. And I think that's only on the back of last season. I think if we had signed him this season and he put in that performance last night, we'd all be saying he was appalling. Now, I'm prepared to give Jadel Katongo the benefit of the doubt, and I think we all are, that he's going to be a good player because he was last season. But it's time for him to step up now as well. He was here last season. We've paid a decent amount of money on his wages. He needs to step up. And then I think we need a centre-back, and I think we need a right-back, and I think we need to spend some money on them. And I think they need to be from England with experience of the English Football League and the physicality and the pressures and all that sort of stuff that goes with it, and not somebody, you know, from the conference that's played a few games for Rochdale or from the Swedish second division that's going to really acclimatise. We need an immediate fix. And we might say that the season's over at this point, and I think there is an argument that we probably aren't going to make the playoffs now because we're 9 points off and not really. I've been waiting for us to click and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. But what we can't afford is for this to spiral. And as much as I don't think we're going down, I think we're way too good to go down. That's a dangerous attitude for the club to have. So I don't want this spiraling. I think you get two more, you know, solid defenders that I don't even need them to be League One experience. I need them to have a few games in English football that know the rigours of it. And I think you build from there. And I think with two quality defenders, we'll be all right.
Do you know what? I think that you've made the point there, John, and I think that it's the fact that right now where we're at is that we just need to temper expectations. Right now, everybody needs to come out. DMAT needs to come out. Fergie needs to come out. The assistants need to come out. The players need to come out, and they all just need to accept, right, promotion is off the table. The playoffs are off the table this season. We discussed it at the start of the season about it being a rebuild. I think that now it is finally time to accept that this season will be that rebuild. Send back the loan players that we're not going to be benefiting from in Sam Curtis and then maybe even Sissoko potentially. I don't know whether he's going to add anything massive. and keep Katongo so that we've got that flexibility in what he does. But I think that it's now time to sort of accept, look, this season is a dud season. I don't think we'll get relegated. There's plenty of teams worse than us. And I just think that we need to just really work on what we're going to do for the rest of the season to ensure that we don't have nights like last night, because it was painful. I've never experienced anything in the sort of, let's say, 15 to 16 years that I've watched Posh. It was just as negative as you can be, really.
Yeah, and I completely agree that we should temper expectations, and I'm all here for that. I don't want us to shoot ourselves in the foot, though, by sending certain loanees back. You said Suoso there. I'd be reluctant to send him back, because I am expecting that we are going to lose a few big names in the January transfer window, I presume, and I probably reckon Kitriani might be one of those names. So I wouldn't really... I'd be reluctant to send him back. You know, we're still trying to finish as high as we can. If we were to send Soho back and Kitriani back, we end up with Collins and Haviland, who I don't think has been poor, but if we get a bad run of games and De Havilland picks up an injury or Collins, I just think it leaves us a bit thin on the ground. So I wouldn't want us to shoot ourselves in the own foot with sending our loans back and developing our own players. I'm happy with keeping the majority of the loans. Sam Curtis, you know, if they want to take him back, I'm not going to complain. I wouldn't want us to leave us thin on the ground. But I'm completely with John in the fact that we should definitely be picking up players and spending money on players as well, because we're not going to shy away from the fact that we did get a lot of money over the summer. We sold a lot of players. We got Tony sell on money. You know, we must have money in the bank to spend. I don't know where the money has gone. There must be something to spend on players if we need them. And I think we should go out and search in that market for two players in the defence, especially at centre back and right back.
So, I don't even know where to start. I've been sat back listening to all you lot, you know, say how shit we were, how shit that players was. We should have watched a different game to me. Generally, I don't see what the issue is. But, you know, who the fuck am I trying to kid? It was fucking dog shit. The game itself, seriously, I can't remember the last time I've seen a performance as bad as that. Now, I don't want to sit here and criticise them as much as I probably would do, but we wasn't very good. Our passing was sloppy. Our decision making wasn't great. We've got, you know, from Fergie, some of his decisions were absolutely fucking shocking. You know, I don't understand how we can play three, four different systems. We had Odu playing in four different positions himself. You know, he didn't know if he was coming or going, whatever. What chances have any players got of getting into a rhythm of finding the way that they play in a game? So from that point of view, We wasn't very good at all. And I'm with John. There's two players that stood out for me. And when I say stood out, I thought was average. The rest were below average. I thought Nevitt had a very good game for his standard. And for the team standard, I think I'll give him a solid average. And again, Mothersill, when he come on, he done what he should have been doing. He put some good balls in the box and he actually, you know, beat the player to get to where he needed to be. So that's from a Peterborough point of view and the manager's point of view. Fans, we can't be getting on the back of our players during the game. I'm with Fergie to a point. You know, let's fucking take it a piss. Let's support our team. You know, they were struggling. You could see they were struggling. You could see they was getting, you know, it wasn't working for them. The last thing they need is for us to give them more fucking shit. At the end of the game, boo them, fucking hoo them, whatever you want to do to them. But during the game, encourage them. Now, that's said about all the players and the fans and the fucking manager. What about, who do we play? But Burton, fucking hell. Burton, I think we need to give them a little bit of credit. Whilst they were fucking dog shit themselves, they come out with a game play, a set play of how they wanted to play the game, and they've done it to the T. You know, they wouldn't let us get through. Oh, I can't even fucking think my words because I'm trying to get it all out. But they had a way they was going to play, and they've done it absolutely spot on. You know, they nullified us. We couldn't get through. They was like one step ahead of us. They would have took a 0-0 draw. 100% they would have took a 0-0 draw. The fact that they got through and scored a goal, I think it was an added bonus for them. To go back with 3 points is 2 points more than I was hoping for. So you've got to give them credit. But it was shit. It was really, really shit. And we're all saying, you know, a few of you just said about, you know, what our expectations are. I think at the start of the season, I said we'd finish 15th. And whilst I don't think we're going to get in playoffs or promotion or anything like that. I think we can't, you know, fool ourselves. We are slipping into a relegation battle, you know, whether we like it or not. We're 3 points away and people say, yeah, we've got games and we've got this and there's a big gap. It doesn't fucking matter. No team is ever too good to go down, you know. And I think as Peterborough fans, we've had it so good for so many years. I know we've been relegated from the Championship, but let's face it, we've been punching above our weight. We're in a Championship. We're a very, very good League One team, okay? And historically, we should be in the top half. At the moment, we're having a really difficult time. We can't fucking keep a clean sheet for the sake of it. Our performances have not been great, although we've had some very good individual performances and from time to time, that's going to happen. But if we have many more games and performances like we did last night and the teams holding us back like they did, we could be right down there with the likes of the Cobblers, with the likes of the Burtons, you know. And do we have the minerals to get ourselves out of it if we do slip all the way down there? I don't think we do, you know, because we don't even have the minerals to keep a fucking clean sheet. We don't really have the minerals to sort of hold on to a lead if we only went 1-0 up. So let's not sort of get too upset and too downbeat, but I think we've got to face facts that we could be in a relegation battle if we continue to have performances like that. But Monday is a different game. We'll talk about that shortly, but mate, it was shit last night. It was fucking awful. There's no way to put it. It was shit. But there we go. What more can I say? I think I've had my little moment.
Yeah, so I think we might go back and just talk about whether relegation is a genuine possibility a bit later. I just want to take us back to the game because, I mean, it feels harsh to single out players in a game where pretty much the entire team played badly. But I have to say, one player who really disappointed me last night was Abraham Odo. I think he was brought in for Malik Mothersill, which was a decision I wasn't particularly keen on. However, I can understand the logic behind it before, you know, what happened. I think he's been reasonable off the bench in recent weeks and shown some flashes. But when you're given a chance like that, what the fuck are you doing putting in such an insipid performance? Like, I don't get that. It looked like from minute one, he wasn't even engaged with the game. There was a breakaway 5 minutes into the match where he stood with the ball at his feet on the edge of his own box and passed it backwards rather than running into the 30 yards of space he had ahead of him. And from that moment on, it was like nothing got better. I think the crowd all groaned at that point and nothing got better, but I just didn't understand it. I don't think he once tried to take his man on. And I go back to it that Mothersill wasn't great last night, but he had a bit of, you know, get up and go about him. You can't accuse him of not trying. It didn't come off, but he did run at his man a couple of times. Odo didn't even do that. And everything he did was just pass backwards. Like, why are you playing so safely? You've got nothing to lose. You're probably going to lose your place if you don't play really well. Give it a go. Go at people. I could not fathom what he did. And he was hamstrung. The one mitigating thing I will say is he was hamstrung a little bit by Fergie's tactical shifts where he kept changing positions. But to be given a chance and then to perform with that, I don't even know what it was. It looked like an attitude. We all accuse Randall sometimes, and he wasn't great last night either, of looking very lethargic or not engaged with the game. Odo was like that. Like, I just could not get my head around it at all.
Look, I think that's the important thing is, and that's maybe a frustration that I had of Odo, is that when you have a player who is strong in their position, they don't get moved around the pitch four times and they don't play in four different positions. And I think that's probably the really important thing in this sort of section is that I said when we recorded on Saturday night, I said that I have no idea why Fergie dug Malik out. And last night just proved exactly why. Why has he done that? Why has he dropped Malik? Why has he dropped a starting front four that have scored however many goals? And why has he changed it? And why has he rotated it? There was no need for it. It clearly showed that Odo is a good impact player. I'm not going to say that he's shit. He was shit last night. But he played well against Newport, he played well against Notts County, and he's played well against Crystal Palace under 21s. Now, he's somebody that's learning and he's somebody that's growing, but he's clearly not at the League One level yet. And he has a lot of developing to do until he gets to that point. Mothersfield has had a whole season with us last season and is now kicking on. Just like a lot of the other players do that come and play for us, they kick on eventually. It's all to do with the fact that they sort of just don't take their chance when they're given it. When we think back to Poku, when he first joined, he came in for a couple of games, didn't he? And then went back to the 23s and then moved on. But again, similar to Wallin, Oddo is of an age where he should be coming in and should be making an impact. And if he's not making an impact against the shittest team in the league, then you've got to have real concerns, because he offered nothing. Like John said, there were times where he was taking the ball on the halfway line, moving left to right, and then just passing it backwards and not running. And the one thing that he has is a good bit of trickery and a good bit of pace. He's got to be taking advantage of that and getting at some of the slower defenders, poorer defenders, the team that's conceded now one less than us in the league. You've got to be taking advantage of that. And like you say, John, he just has not shown any reason why he should be starting on Monday. And it's very clear to see that Malik Mothersill will be back in the starting 11. He should have never been taken out of it, but now he's going to be back in it come Monday night. That's for sure.
Yeah, and look, the players, they put in a poor performance, and I'm not going to say that they didn't, but I think the management also probably have to hold their hands up a little bit. And we have seen this reoccurring pattern throughout this season, throughout last season, when it's going wrong, Fergie makes decisions that I, look, and I'm no expert, but makes decisions that I can't understand. And I think tonight, by the sounds of things, was another prime example of that, where he brings players on and puts them in positions to, and I don't know what he envisions, but he brings players on and he puts them in certain areas that are actually, it ends up being a detriment to us, because we inevitably went down. Instead of sticking at the system that has brought us so much success, we either go to a five back or we go to a diamond, or and it doesn't work. And it hasn't worked. I think Oxford away, we lost 5-0. He tried to change the system. It didn't work. He did it earlier on the season with the close games. We go 0-0. We're losing 1-0. And it's like a panic. And he brings his players on, and in the end, we look worse. You know, Huddersfield Town at the start of the season was a prime example of that. We were 1-0 down, 2-0 down. We changed the system and we looked dramatically like worse than we did. And I just think that if we build a plan, a plan B, that's what we need, is a plan B. We don't have a plan B. And last season, we were so successful, I think, because we had that plan B. If we're 1-0, if we're 1-0 down, we bring Jono on and we fire balls in the box. And that was our plan B. And it changed, and teams didn't know how to defend against that, because they practiced all week on defending our counter-attacking and our ability to control the possession. But then when we brought Jono on and we start firing balls in the box, it's a completely different game. We don't have that this season. We don't have a plan B. And that has been a real killer, because the plan Bs are back fives or diamonds or 4-4-2s. And inevitably, we look far worse than the opposition when we make those tactical and systematic changes. If we had a plan B, we'd be so much more tactically sound, and we wouldn't be panicking and bringing different substitutes on. And Fergie's done brilliantly with the group of players that he's got, and I'm not taking that away from him, because last season was amazing and there's been games this season that have been really good. But it's those sort of moments where maybe a different game plan and a plan B would really help us.
Do you know, my issue with the plan B thing is that we sit and we watch Fergie's interviews before and after the games, and he very much drills in, right, this is the way that we're going to play. You've got to work it out on the pitch. And that's what confuses me with the multiple changes that we witnessed yesterday, is that it's just a total contradiction to what we hear in the pre-match interviews and the post-match interviews. I have no doubt that those players, if they were in that 4-2-3-1, they would have figured it out and they would have worked out how to score a goal against Burton yesterday. But because they moved and then it takes them 10 minutes to get back into the flow of things and work out where everybody is on the pitch, you're essentially wasting time on the pitch every time that you make a tactical change, which is ultimately not the time that we had yesterday. It was just so frustrating, like notes being passed around, people being shouted instructions from the touchline. If we stick to what we know, we stick to what we're good at, I'm relatively confident that we win that game yesterday. But Fergie's got a little bit frustrated with how things were going, and he's changed it too soon, I think.
So while we're on the topic of Fergie, and I think it's probably the time to have this discussion now. I think with us being 3 points above the relegation zone, Ash and Max have been quite vehemently against, and Max, for those on YouTube, is shaking his head because I think he's preempting what I'm about to ask. But Dale, I'm going to come to you first because you've been quite quiet so far on Fergie. At what stage does he come under pressure? I would like to say, just before we go do this question, I don't want Ferguson sacked until the point that, you know, we're probably looking down the barrel of relegation, because I think he's a better manager and I think he's hamstrung by his team. I'm not going to say anymore. I'm going to go straight to Dell. Dell, at what point does Fergie become under any pressure? And are you having any questions about managerial change yet?
Okay, so I don't think you should be under any pressure whatsoever, if I'm honest, this season. We have got a shitload of youngsters. They're not quite sort of what we expected them to be when we signed them. Let's be honest, he didn't sign the players. They were signed for him through the investment. I don't think he should be under any pressure of losing his job. I don't think he should walk, and I don't think he should be sacked. Come the summer, I think if we're still in this situation where we're either relegated or mid-table or bottom half, we should evaluate where we are, what way we're going to go forward. Because let's be honest, and who else is there? Who, name me a better League One manager than Fergie. You know, I'm not his biggest fan. Don't get me wrong. I ain't going to blow smoke up his arse or anything. But, well, I just have, actually. But he's probably one of the, do you know what I mean? He probably is one of the best League One managers when he's got the right players working the way. Look at last season. Fucking hell, nobody expected us to be where we were with the players we had. You know, I don't think there's many managers that could have got them players to where we were. This season, it ain't quite happening. So why should he be under any pressure? You know, what are we going to do? Keep fucking swapping? Should we have Grant McCann back again? Should we have Steve Evans back? Do you know what I mean? Dave Robertson, for fuck's sake. Bollocks. I don't think he should be under any pressure whatsoever. With Peterborough United, we're a League One team. Okay, fact. We're not having the best of seasons. Every team, every club will have a year or so where it's not happening for them. And this is the year. So, no, absolutely not. Shouldn't be under pressure, shouldn't even consider walking out the job. However, I just wanted to jump in about the last question about Fergie. Last night, we can't have too many managerial performances from that. Whilst I've already said it, the players didn't perform, they didn't. But from manager, you can't be swapping and changing the formation and the players as much as what he did. Because it reminded me of fucking non-league junior football. With no disrespect to the youngsters, but it was, right, we've got another player coming on. You go here, you go there. You're going to have a little go up front. You know, actually, can you go and go for a little while? Whilst it wasn't quite that extreme, it was a case of like, fuck it. And we said about Odu, four different positions. When we'd done the first change last night, when he changed it quite early on, I thought, fair fucking play. Fair play. You know, it's not working. You've made an early change. But then he put Katongo on the left-hand side. That's really strong, clearly not his best position. So, yeah, he was trying to change it. Give it 10 minutes. That don't work. Oh, let's change this player there. He tried to do too much last night and he panicked, if I'm honest. Max said it earlier, he panicked. 100% he panicked. And I get why he did, because nothing was working. And if we had stayed there for another hour and a half, another game after, it still wouldn't have worked. That's the way it goes sometimes. But we can't have... I know we've gone up, but we can't have as many, too many nights like that as well. But going back to your question, John, because I do like to go off in different fucking directions, a bit like Fergie did last night. No, he shouldn't be under pressure.
You're right. And look, there's some real, real weirdos on social media that like to come for us and come and attack us and like to attack our manager and like to attack our owner. But anybody that thinks that getting rid of Darren Ferguson or Darren McAntony right now and thinks that that solves our problems, you have got not just one screw loose, multiple screws loose, and you need to go and have a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror. There is only one manager for this football club, just like his dad. How many years did his dad spend at Manchester United? Yes, the fortunes and the riches are not the same. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that they are, but sometimes things just work. And how many times have we got rid of Fergie and then gone one, two, three, oh, who are we going to get back? And then what happens? It works again. Sometimes you just need to just weather the storm. And that's what this is. It's a storm. Ironically, I think I saw on the news, we've got a storm Dara at the moment, which is quite interesting. But like I say, anybody that thinks that getting rid of the manager, anybody that thinks getting rid of our owner is the right thing to do, like, you're just a fucking weirdo, honestly. And you're sat behind your little keyboard typing away. Take some ownership of the things that you say, because they just don't make any sense for the long-term future of the football club. Not in the slightest.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I knew exactly what John was going to say as soon as sort of he went in that direction. To be quite frank, Darren Ferguson should remain at this football club until he decides to leave, which I hope that doesn't happen in the near future. Look at last season. Look what can happen when it works. And it will work. Exactly what Ash has sort of said. It will definitely work. It is going to come good. We've got a massive problem with our back line. And that is not something that Darren Ferguson can deal with. He cannot, you know, with the players that he's got, he cannot magic up a you know, League One winning playoff pushing defence. He can't just magic out of thin air. You can employ all the tactics that you want. It doesn't work. He can't just magic a centre-back and a right-back out of thin air. And I think maybe we can have a look back at the recruitment and blame the recruitment in the summer for the reason why we didn't get the players in those positions. But to say on social media, especially, that the manager should be sacked, the board should be sacked, and I saw someone doing some sort of like protest outside the club shop, just like bore off. It's not fair. It's not funny. It's just stupid. This football club has worked. We've had really well. Dale said it multiple times. We've been a top end League One club. We've been in the Championship. We've had it really well. We're having a bit of an off patch, and I'm not going to sit here and say that we aren't. But there's no need for the overreactions. And Darren Ferguson can work magic. He has done it in all four stints. And he can work magic with terrible teams. I'm not saying that this is a terrible team, because offensively it's brilliant. But when this defence clicks, or when we sign someone in January that can sort of play the style of football Darren Ferguson wants, we will click again. It's just weathering that storm, as Ash said, and making sure that we stay on track.
Just want to sort of stretch the point a little bit as well. I know we're talking about Fergie and he shouldn't go, but Ash started off about Dara out, where it's been on social media, etc. Now, you know, in the past, I was a Dara out. You know, I ain't going to lie, I was a Dara out, and he just used to piss me off. And there was a lot of noise coming out, and it's like things behind the scenes we didn't need to know. It was always out in the open about in debt, this, that, ticket, whatever it may be. But I think, you know, at the moment, the club is getting back to where it should be. You know, Dara's keeping his mouth shut as such. We're not hearing all the bullshit that goes about. And, you know, so Dara out is bollocks. Fergie out is bollocks. This fucking protest from the middle of town to go to fucking whatever with the banners, Dara out. Oh, fuck off. Just grow up. It's absolutely stupid. But I know I'm sounding a bit of a hypocrite, because I was a Dara out a few years back. I'm not a big lover of him or anything, but at the moment, we can't really chastise him for anything. What is he doing wrong at the moment, to be fair? You know, nothing. And you know me, I like to say what I think, rightly or wrongly, but just fucking come on. We're going for a blip. If we keep changing managers and shit and owners, we'll end up being called Watford, and that's not good, you know? But anyway, back over to you, John.
Well, I thought we might add a few turncoats in our ranks from what Ash and Max were saying, but clearly not. And just to emphasise, I am very firmly Fergie in, and Dara in for that matter too. And I agree with everything that the lads have said. I think it's a good ethos that we all agree on a podcast for a change, a rarity. Well, after the shambles that was Burton, which I think we've dissected quite well and thoroughly now, we move on to play Northampton on Monday night. And Fergie has certainly got some selection dilemmas ahead of him, hasn't he? After that, he could make 11 changes, to be quite honest with you, and I don't think anyone could argue that it wasn't justified. However, I think, you know, Collins, Jones, we know they're going to start. Fernandez is coming back in. I think those three are pretty much nailed on. The rest of the team, is very much open for debate. And I think one of the big discussion points, which we're going to start with, is Randall or Chris Conclark. Chris Conclark obviously had played for the under-21s before the Burton game to get a bit of match time, which I don't necessarily think was a bad decision. He's not played a huge amount. However, it transpired in hindsight to look an awful decision because it felt like a game that Conclark might have actually been able to unlock. And I think we'll touch on Randall's performance, where again, he went missing, just barely touched the ball. I thought he was pretty abject against Burton. I think he's shown moments at times this season, but I'm pretty fed up of Joel Randall. I think anyone that's listened to this podcast will know that by now. And I'd love Conclark to be given a run of games. I think a derby atmosphere, he'll thrive off that, whereas Randall sometimes shirks away from it. Admittedly, he was quite good against Cambridge this year. But I feel like away at Cobblers, that's the sort of game Conclark's going to love. And for me, he's got to come straight into the team on Monday night. He's the first change that I want to see happen. Ash, what do you think?
Yeah, look, we've been accused of picking on players. We've been accused of targeting players and using them as scapegoats. But quite frankly, after last night, fuck Joel Randall. He was absolutely diabolical. And like you say, John, we are in the trenches right now, and Joel Randall is a beach at Marbella player, not a trenches player at Cobblers in their bowl that they've got of a stadium. Chris Conclark has to come in. I want somebody that's going to walk up to a player and kick the living shit out of them inside the first 5 minutes, hopefully not get sent off, hopefully not break his collarbone again, you know, like how he did the last time against Bristol Rovers. But I think that now's the time, and I think that, like you say, last night, I'm not sure whether he would have made the complete difference. I think that the 90 minutes that he had for the 21s, 23s was probably more beneficial to him than 20, 30 minutes against Burton whilst we're chasing a game. But I think that those 90 minutes will hopefully have put him right in position to start in that number 10 position over Joel Randall. And that's not to say that Joel Randall won't have a part to play against Cobblers when they're maybe a little bit tired towards the end of the game if we're chasing something, but I am so ready for Chris Conclark to start now, because I've had enough of Joel Randall going missing in games.
I'm with you. Yesterday, first half, after about 35-40 minutes, I turned around to my boy and said, right, how many fucking touches has Randall had? I think it was about four. You had a look at his little stat, he had four touches. That's so what's the point? Ineffective. When we played Cambridge, fucking hell. When we played Cobblers on Monday night, I think it's going to be a very similar sort of setup. You know, it's going to be hard to break down, and Randall is not the fucking player we need to get in front of him. Chris Conclark, I believe, should have a crack. You know, and we've also, you know, let's not slate Randall too much, because we normally do, but there's normally a reason for him. But when he's shit, he's shit. When he's good, he's good. He's not one of these players that's sort of in between. And he was pony last night. But he is not the right player for a game like Cobblers on Monday night, in my opinion. And to be fair, we're normally right. Not always, but we're normally right. So Randall off, Conclark on.
Well, I will be the broken record, as I have been for the majority of this season. And look, I think I'm fighting a bit of a losing battle. I think that last night, Joel Randall definitely was extremely poor. And I'm not going to shy away from that fact. Monday night, I think we've been on this podcast today, and we've sat here and we've all said, you know, why is he changing the front four? The tried and tested. Why is he changing the front four? And now the first question is, going into the next game, well, let's just put Conclark in and drop Randall. I think that's contradictory from the points we've already made, especially around Oddo and Mothersill. I don't think that Conclark should start. And this fantasy that we're trying to write, that the Derby Day atmosphere is going to sort of rile him up. And look, Conclark, I'm not shying away from the fact that he is a good player. And he does need a run of games. Is starting him away at Cobblers for the derby the right decision? I don't really think so. I don't think that's the best way to start. A player who has come from non-league and thrown him straight into the derby, and he could definitely change the game. And I'm going to sit here and say this now. Con Clark, to me, I love how much of a maverick he is. He proved that so many times through pre-season in the first run of games that he got at the start. He will do it himself. He will take the ball, he'll shoot in areas, and he'll get into players as well, which is something Randall struggles with. But what I am worried about is Con Clark. From what I've seen of him, he loves the ball and he loves to have that ball. I feel Randall is more selfless. And if we by some stretch of the imagination, Poku's injury was more serious. I haven't really looked up it. If Poku's injury is more serious and he's not playing Monday, we could start both of them. I'm up for that. But if Poku is there, I don't want Con Clark to hold the ball or try and do it all himself and not play the patterns of play that Randall will play if he starts. Yes, you do lose a little bit of physicality in the 10, a lot of physicality in the 10, actually. But on the counter, which is what you want at away games when you've got players like Ricky J. Jones running through the middle and relentlessly pressing, I really don't think Con Clark is a sensible option to throw him into a derby for his first game sort of back after injury.
I admire your defensive skills of Joel Randall, Max, even if I don't agree with them. Randall isn't the only one that could be dropped, as I kind of alluded to. So I'm keen to hear, Ash, a little bit more from you on whether there's any other change. We know you want Con Clark in. Is there anybody else on that bench that you want to start on Monday night?
Yeah, so obviously we've maybe not been the kindest to Sam Curtis, but I think it's a natural time for him to drop back out and Sparks to come back in. He is a left footer. We have a left back position. I think that the work that he does with Mothersill, which is another one of the changes that needs to happen, I think that those two are working together. They've got a good connection. Katongo, I think he sticks at right back. I think then I probably do want to see Manny and George Nevitt as our centre back pairing this week. And it for the Northampton game. Obviously, Max has said in our little chat that we've got that Eves is suspended. So does that mean that Northampton lose a little bit of their physicality up front? I think so, yes. So obviously you've got Manny for the physicality. You then can put your ball playing centre back in Nevitt into that position and let him hopefully try and dictate the game from the back. The only one that I'm really not sure about is whether there is a place for Hector Kyprianou in this team against Northampton on Monday night. And I don't think I've got the answer to that. So that is probably an open question to the floor, is whether Kyprianou does come back in instead of De Havilland or Collins.
He does for me. He does come back in for me. I think away at Northampton in a derby, the thing we want is sort of experience. And yes, De Havilland has played a lot while Hector Kyprianou has been out, but it's Hector Kyprianou. We know what he's capable of. We know he's capable of dictating games. When you've got Lee Burge, who I believe is injured, he didn't play their game against Stevenage, and Eves, who is suspended, and you're up against players like McGeehan, who is a good League One player and has a good League One standard. You want your best players. It's just frustrating for De Havilland, because I think he has done really, really well. But I think this is a perfect game for Kyprianou to come back in and show what he's worth. We had question marks about him. At the start of the season. And when he got injured and De Havilland came in, De Havilland did a good job. But I think it's Kyprianou's position and he should play Monday night.
Yeah, I'm fully with you, Max. I think Kyprianou comes in for me as well, providing he's fit enough. Fergie did say that he played half an hour, so they need to check him out. I think if he is fit, he definitely starts. The other one I would quite like to see start is Kieran Hayes. I think, obviously, Poku's injured. This is with the assumption that Poku is injured, and I don't think you're recovering from a hamstring injury within 4 days, even if it is a minor one. It's a pretty risky strategy to be chucking him back out there. So I think the replacement I'd like to see is Kieran Hayes. I feel like I quite like Hayes. There are definitely limitations to his game in terms of in the final third. I feel like his end product can leave a little bit to be desired at times. However, I'm not sure I've seen him have a particularly bad game for Peterborough yet. He feels to me like I sort of criticised Oddo for just not really looking like he gave a shit last night. Whereas when Hayes gets on the pitch, I always feel like he does give a shit, regardless of the quality that he offers or whatever. He will work his socks off. He will run. He's tenacious. He puts himself about. He presses. He harries defenders. And I kind of just want to see a little bit of that after what we saw Wednesday. I'm not one of these people that, you know, goes on about passion in the same way that Dale loves a 50-50. I quite like my passing football. But I almost feel like I just want to see that against Cobblers. At least after what we showed up, at least give me 11 players out there that want to try. They're going to run their fucking bollocks off for the shirt and put in a performance that makes it look like you care about Peterborough. And I know Hayes is going to do that. So I think if Poku's out, and obviously if Poku's fit, that changes. But I definitely think Hayes is the man to step in. Did anyone want to disagree with me on that?
Not at all. I think that obviously the negatives that we saw in Otto's performance last night are the total opposite of what you get from Hayes. He's not afraid to run directly at 1, 2, 3 players. He's not always going to come off. It's not always going to work. But like, that's what you want. You want that directness. You want that ability to carry the ball forwards, to relieve some of the pressure from our leaky defence. And when you've got somebody like Kean Hayes that is happy with the ball at their feet, can keep it close to their feet and carry it forwards 30, 40 yards, I do think that is something that you want in the team, especially away from home. I'm really not sure on the Poku injury. Like, I think that maybe I'm hoping that it was just a feel that he had rather than an actual tear. So I'm still confident that he maybe makes that appearance on Monday. But if not, yeah, I don't think that Otto starts. It's as simple as that. So I think that it has to be Hayes, and then Otto from the bench potentially, if required.
Well, we're going to move on to our score predictions for the game now, and I will prelude this by saying normally the lads are very positive with their score predictions. There's been numerous times this season where we've predicted some pretty heavy posh wins, only to be proven wrong. So I'm actually intrigued to hear what the guy is going to say and whether any confidence has been knocked after the last few weeks, really. I'm going to start with Ash. Score prediction, please.
Look, I said that Burton was shit and cannon fodder, and I'm going to fuck it. I'm doubling down today. Cobblers are shit. Like, if we think we're bad, Cobblers are worse. Their managers fucking walked. That's how shit they are. So unless Fergie does something drastic in the next sort of 4 or 5 days, then we're going to batter them. It's going to be 5-1. Fuck it. 5-1. Ricky's going to score a hat-trick.
Okay, well, I've just been on their podcast, to be fair, up the cot, or talking bollocks or talking cobblers, whatever they call themselves. And I actually initially said 5-1 to Posh. But then I sort of got a little bit bad. Yeah, a little bit bad. So I said, you know what, it won't be 5-1. That'll be taking a piss. But what I am going to do, we are going to get a clean sheet. So I am convinced we're going to get a clean sheet for the first time all fucking season, right? And I changed it to 4-0. So I think we're going to go 4-0. I just want to talk about something really quickly. During the group chat last night, I was like, we're playing this. It's the 64th minute, I think it was, because Lod's message. 64th minute, I said, we are fucking awful. We're going to play the worst game ever, but we're going to keep a clean sheet. As they scored in the 65th minute, wasn't it? I don't even think I'd finish typing. But anyway, so going back, 4-0, we are going to win.
Well, I think I can't do the positivity, boys. I can't do it. I think it's gone from me. I can't do another 4-1 or something like that. I mean, I'm going to go with a draw. I don't think we'll lose. I kind of think we'll get a bit of a reaction, but they're also going to have a new manager bounce, and I'm scared of it. And we didn't do very well there last season with a better team. It's going to be 1-1. It's going to be 1-1. It's going to be rotten, and we're all going to be just looking over our shoulders again. I'm sorry. I can't do any more positivity, lads. It's been beaten out of me.
Well, my awful beanie is going to end up on a fan forum when we inevitably lose 1-0. But I am going to say that we're going to win 3-0. So I'm not as optimistic as Ashley. But I just think in Cobbler's current situation, they don't have their first choice keeper. They don't have their first choice striker. And their fans have said that they have been really, really poor for a while. After the Stevenage loss, fans are already writing them off and said that they were going to finish dead last in the comment section, saying that they were already relegated. So that gives me an element of confidence. And I think that our press is just going to be too relentless. And it was when they came to the Western Homes last season. Ricky J. Jones's press was completely relentless and they couldn't really play or do anything. So I am going to say 3-0. I'm going to agree with Dell. We're going to keep a clean sheet. And hopefully we're not going to be changing every single defender every other week to try and get it working. It's going to be this defence that we bring in for Cobblers.
Well, let's hope the other lads are right and we are celebrating a Derby Day victory on Monday evening.
It's not a derby. It's just another game. Cambridge is the derby and nothing more than that.
Well, there's me corrected. Although I do agree, Cambridge is the big derby. This is just a mediocre, mildly tepid derby, I would call it. Not a proper one.
They already lost their derby game to fucking Kettering in the FA Cup and they were shit.
Yeah, that's a fair point, right? That's a fair point. It is a fucking derby just because you lot are little fucking teenagers.
No,
all right? And, don't play Cobblers, whatever. It's a fucking derby. It's not as big as Cambridge, granted. But if you ask the older people, older than me, there are a few of us about, Cobblers is a big one, right? But it's a derby, no doubt about it, right? There's no reason that it's a derby. So let's just fucking batter them, whatever. Sorry.
I was just going to say that the old generation are just wrong.
Fucking hell, man.
Well, on that note, I think we've just pissed off the whole of Northampton and probably half of Peterborough. So I'm going to end it there. We are going to be celebrating what might be a derby victory or might not be a derby victory. Whatever you want to call it. Let's just hope we're celebrating Posh's 3 points next week and we can all forget about that shite that was Burton. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast. I am fucking old.